Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So today is the 40th anniversary of the student uprising at Columbia University, the famous spring of 68, and we want to hear from anyone who protested at Columbia in that demonstration. Any college students, today we're also going to open up the phones for you. Anyone currently in college, have you heard about the demonstrations of the spring of 68? And do you care? And is there a generation gap, most importantly, in how you work for change? College students, call us, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And if you were a protester at Columbia in the spring of 1968, call us, 212-433-9692, or post a comment to WNYC.org. How do you look back on what you did 40 years ago? There were two Columbia protest alums weighing in on the opinion pages of local papers this morning. Novelist Paul Auster in the New York Times and Daily News columnist Juan Gonzalez, who both look back on those crazy days when the King assassination, the Vietnam War, Columbia's expansion plans all sparked student protests that led to the occupation of five campus buildings and battles with the police as the police eventually moved in to retake the campus. Juan Gonzalez revisited the campus yesterday, and he wrote, quote, "Today's students, it seems, are better behaved." I think he's being a little sarcastic here. Better behaved. No one wants to endanger a future career by staging some crazy old-time campus occupation and getting arrested. They'll just vote for Barack Obama and let him fix the war in Iraq, unquote. So, college students, does that sound like you? And do you like that characterization by Juan Gonzalez? And if not, how do you affect change? Is it just voting for Barack Obama, as college students are likely to do? Did violent protests go out with dial telephones and styling product-free hair? Does voting for Obama seem like it's enough? And we want to hear from you and any listeners like Paul Auster and Juan Gonzalez who were there on campus in 1968. What was accomplished? Do you regret the action? Call us, 212-433-9692. You know, Auster wrote that he has no regrets, but writes, what did we accomplish? Not much of anything. The gymnasium was scrapped. That was the controversial Columbia expansion of that day. But the war didn't end, although Juan Gonzalez points out that Columbia did cut its ties to war research, at least for a while. And so far, the only connection anyone has made between the Columbia alum, class of 83, Barack Obama, and the 1968 protesters is coming from his opposition about his ties to ex-weatherman William Ayers. So, listeners, if you were there in the spring of 68, did you accomplish anything? How do you look back on that? And if you're in college right now, is there a generation gap in how you work for change? 212-433-WNYC. And Paul in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Brian G. I get to be first. I was there. I had dropped out of Columbia a couple months before, not by my choice. And I happened to be on campus then with my friends. And I really saw it as a giant panty raid. I thought it was completely bogus. It was self-righteous. And these people were destructive to no end. There were people there whose idea of changing the world was, you know, becoming a doctor, becoming a teacher, all that kind of stuff. And they were, to some degree, I can't think of a polite word, messed up in their plans. And I think that
you mean you think the protesters were a lot of confused individuals who just didn't have a sense of their own personal futures, of who they were?
No. I mean, I'm saying that the people who did have a sense of their own. I mean, this was a time where people wanted to fix the world, and their idea have started with getting a degree and going on into the world and doing good things.
Yeah, but there's a big difference between calling it a panty raid, which you did, and saying they were self-righteous. A panty raid makes it sound like they really didn't have a cause. They were just out to make mischief or have a good time. Self-righteous be people who maybe take themselves a little too seriously, but are really working towards something.
No, I think they were having a good time, you know, running around smoking President Kirk cigars. And I think the spirit was that of a panty raid. And
all right, I'm going to leave it there. Tom in Manhattan was there, and I think looks back on it differently. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I definitely look at it differently than that gentleman. I was a student in good standing when the events happened. I was tremendously against the war in Vietnam and Colombia's relationship to its neighbors, which was expansionist and high-handed and didn't care about the fact that it had kicked 10,000 people out of its local community in the decade previously. And we managed to affect all of those things. We severed Colombia's ties with the war in Vietnam. It had been doing war research as an institution. We stopped the construction of the gymnasium. And we inspired students all over the world to take a positive stance. Now, Colombia was at the time not a well-governed institution, and because of its very rigid stand toward us, created a situation where there was a great deal of violence perpetrated by the police. The students were nonviolent, completely nonviolent. The demonstrations were nonviolent, at least until that original bust.
Do you look at Colombia students today, and there may be different versions about whether students were nonviolent, but, you know, not to get into that. Do you look at college students today at Columbia or elsewhere and say, oh, my God, they're so apathetic. This is pathetic.
No, I don't. It's a different world. I met some Columbia students today who are wonderfully active and activist and have a very positive relationship to changing their own world. But the options that they have are different than the ones we had, and the world they face is completely different. So it really doesn't compare.
Tom, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you. Eric in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Eric.
Hi, good morning. I'm a current college student now at NYU, and I'd actually argue that we're pretty apathetic right now, I guess, compared to, you know, back in the 60s.
Apathetic. So even Tom is giving you credit for not being so apathetic, but if so, why?
Well, I guess at NYU is characterized as being an active liberal school, and it's simply the opposite of what I've seen here. If anything, the conservatives are the most active, I guess, because they feel like a minority. But at the same time, there really isn't much in the way of student protests or activism, you know, given the war. Nobody really seems to care.
You think it's something about NYU? Maybe a lot of people coming from out of town, spending a whole lot of money to get an education for the sake of their career. So do you think it would be different from the Columbia student body today?
Well, I think Columbia, I would characterize it the same way. I mean, sure, they have less financial, they're given more financial aid, but any of the big private universities, right, people are there for the degree.
Now, you know what? Stay there. Let's put a couple people on here, if you're willing, to go on with Matt from Columbia. Current student, Matt?
I'm actually a graduate student right now.
Grad student at Columbia, okay.
Yeah, I actually just wanted to offer an anecdote that is basically devoid of political content, but it's just something that I saw the other day that sort of struck me as interesting. They've had this tradition at Columbia for the past few years that I've been there, which is called 40 on 40, where 40 days before graduation, all of the seniors go out onto the steps and, you know, drink 40-ounce beers and just basically party, but nobody can, you know, you can't arrest everybody, and it's just sort of a little tradition that they have. But in the past couple of years, this tradition has become essentially run by the university, and it has now been turned into a sort of a sanctioned event. So this year, people had, you know, their names on lists, and you would show up and get your name checked off, and you would get a wristband and go behind this barricade in a designated area where you could then get beer that was served to you by the university itself. I just thought it was sort of an interesting irony 40 years after 68 that this, you know, everybody is so used to being obedient, and everything is like all forms of subversion, even just social fun subversion, are sort of co-opted and taken over by the university.
All right, Matt and Eric, stay there because Coley in Manhattan is going to join you. Hi, Coley, you're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Where do you go to school?
I go to Brooklyn College.
And is apathy the rule of the day?
I don't believe it is. I believe we're living in an age of different form of communication, whereas in the late 60s, you needed to make a big to-do to get a news crew out there for more than just your campus to see it. Nowadays, I can just go on YouTube and just send out a message with my face on it and reach hundreds of thousands of people.
Matt, what do you think of that in a comparison?
You know, I don't know. There is, I wouldn't say that people in general are apathetic, but I think that as far as political expression, there is a real tendency to turn towards the Internet. And I think one of the things that's coming along with that is the Internet is sort of polluting the political atmosphere on campus a little bit because there's so much access to anonymous expressions. A lot of people around campus are saying things that they normally wouldn't have the guts to say if their name was attached to it, and you're seeing a lot of racist expression recently surrounding the Chinese student who was killed, I think, on 122nd Street.
Yeah.
All people were blogging, all of this awful stuff. This has sort of become the way of political participation on campus, is to just sort of blog all of your feelings, and people are walking around looking at one another like, is this the kind of person that was just saying all these awful things, or is this that racist person that
Eric,
I just read on the blog?
Eric, you think it's like that at NYU?
Well, I would say that people have to like have a certain threshold of feelings about an issue before if they are willing to attach a name on that and leave the anonymity of the Internet. And that threshold isn't being reached. I'm sure people have feelings, but to go and, in person do something about it as a cohesive group, that doesn't exist at all.
So let me add Molly at Montclair State, who I think is frustrated with media venues to express themselves, to express yourselves. Molly, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I would definitely disagree with the other two callers. I mean, I'm a college student, and I'm a broadcasting student, and I know everyone else who's in the broadcasting department. We all want to contribute. We all have ideas, but we express them through Facebook because we think that if we were to call, I guess, actual Obama or Clinton, then we wouldn't be listened to. But then again, Facebook, MySpace, they're not actual legitimate venues for political ideas or discussions. I mean, when's the last time that you heard Clinton's people get on and say, oh, I had this really great economic plan from Facebook? It just doesn't happen.
Yeah. So, Coley, do you think maybe the Internet that you were lauding before has less of an effect politically than gathering on campus in a mass, even though people can express themselves?
Well, I think that to deny that the Internet's effectiveness is kind of, I don't understand to deny it, seeing as many debates now have YouTube questions. I think everyone understands the validity of the Internet as a form of expression. I'm not saying the expression can be 100% valid because it doesn't have my face on it all the time, but I think political expression is political expression, even if some people are too cowardly to put their name on it. So I think it can be cohesive. It just all depends on how you do it.
Julio in the Bronx. Hi, Julio. You were a freshman at Columbia in 68?
Yes, I was, and I look back on it as almost like my rite of initiation or baptism by fire, because when I was there, I was one of the very few Hispanic students. And don't forget, this was a university that was almost like 90% white.
Mm-hmm.
So there were a small number of Hispanics and a larger but still a small number of black students. And the school was, in a sense, polarized even before we had the problems. You had black students who stayed with black students and Hispanic students who stayed with Hispanics. And those divisions became more visible when we had the riots, because if for those who were there, it really started when the black students, when the black students took over one particular building with the other white students.
We're just about out of time, unfortunately.
Oh,
do you, when you look at today's college students, what do you think, Julio?
Oh, nowhere near as involved, and I'm talking also from the perspective of seeing the children of my classmates who are now in college, and they
I'm
are
sorry
nowhere
to
near
say that I have to leave it there with all of you. Thank you, Julio, Matt, Coley, Eric, Linda, and thanks to all of you who called on protesting on campus then and now. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.